Morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is John Kinney, Kinney Law. I represent Brian J. Murdoch, the plaintiff appellant, in this very important matter before the court. Your honors, I want to point out at the outset that the facts of this case are fairly simple. I'm not going to bore the court with a recitation of the facts, but I will state that it is important for the court to consider that the biological mother in this case on several occasions told Mr. Murdoch that the minor child at issue in this proceeding was not his child, and in fact admitted on the stand at trial that she simply wanted Mr. Murdoch to go away. Under the facts of this case, I think it's important for the court to consider the equitable estoppel argument in light of that evidence.
What did the district court say about that?
The district court determined, and in counsel's opinion, investigated the inner workings of Mr. Murdoch's brain at the time that he was receiving this information, and simply stated that Mr. Murdoch wanted to believe that the child was not his, that he wanted to go back to his wife, that he simply was happily ignorant and took the information that was given to him and to put it succinctly was glad. It's true that Mr. Murdoch, during the evidentiary phase of this case, stated that he thought he dodged a bullet. But unfortunately, I think the trial court took that statement and beat Mr. Murdoch with it somewhat in the findings. And I think that when a situation arises like this and you're in a hotly emotional state, when two people are talking about issues as difficult as this issue must have been to talk about, I think the trial court's sort of almost extrajudicial investigation into the thoughts and processes of the minds of Mr. Murdoch are not appropriate. He took the information that was given to him, whether he was happy about it or not, or whether he wanted to go back to his wife or not, is really not the issue. He was told something that was false. He relied on it.
We can concede all that, but in 2012, when he bumped into the mother, what turned on the light to tell him at that point in time that he might be the father of the child? In other words, what facts were different in 2012 from 2004 at the time of the child's birth?
Well, I think that it's clear from the record that the two individuals involved, the biological mother and the biological father, had renewed a warm relationship where they were continuing their romantic relationship.
What does that have to do with telling him he might be the father of someone born in 2004?
Well, I think that Mr. Murdoch was told that he was likely to be the father of a child born in 2004 at that time. And then what's important is that Mr. Murdoch didn't just believe it. He went and sought genetic testing.
Is it your position that genetic testing wasn't available in 2004?
It's not my position. I'm not an expert in that area, but I do believe that the public's knowledge of how readily available genetic testing is and was has developed over time.
Since the birth of the child, what actions has Mr. Murdoch done that would give him the status of maybe in loco parentis so that he might have some attachment to the child to form a basis for this action?
Well, that's only one avenue for Mr. Murdoch to assert his claims.
Well, I understand,
but
my question is, what did he have any contact with the child when the child was born?
Not after the child was born. He did not have contact with the child until 2012.
Okay.
Your Honors, I believe that it's important for the court to consider the interrelationship between the jurisprudence related to in loco parentis and related to moving forward with the case as a next friend, and the constitutional claims and the estoppel claims. For example, this court should be aware of Nebraska jurisprudence where basically a biological father and someone who's married to a woman who has a child, both of those men can be considered to be the father of a child. In other words, in Nebraska, a child can have two fathers for purposes of child support. A child can have two fathers for purposes of the state or the biological mother bringing a claim as next friend. But in the circumstances here, a minor child is locked out from having two fathers. And the court should at least entertain the notion that a biological father who's been told the kinds of things that this father was told in this case should at least have the opportunity to come forward and present a claim that he can be established as the minor child's father. It's not to lock out the husband of the defendant. It's to simply assert the rights that we all would like to see a biological father have. And so when I look at the next friend analysis in this case, and I look at the Dope versus Milbauer case, that case is interrelated with the estoppel claim and the constitutional claim in that a biological father ought to have standing to bring a case as next friend, particularly in light of the things that Mr. Murdoch was told in this case. If you're told to go away and if
well,
you're
under your theory, a biological father would have unlimited time in which to bring this action. Maybe 18 years. Is that what you're arguing, that he has at least 18 years?
Absolutely, I'm arguing that, Your Honor. I think a biological father of a minor child ought to be able to establish his claim at any point in the minor child's life. A child deserves a chance to have a relationship with his biological father. And I think that our jurisprudence, both at a federal level and a state level, has started to recognize the unconventionality, if that's even a word. I would say this. Our courts are starting to recognize unconventional marriages, unconventional parentage. Our courts are starting to recognize that it's not just simply one mother, one father in a married union that produces children. And so I think that we need to modernize Nebraska jurisprudence to recognize claims like...
The policy now is that the state recognizes some benefit to a relationship that has existed between the legal father and the child, and some concept that the family should not be disturbed even if the biological father has now been found. Is that the policy now?
Well, the policy now appears to be, if you look at the four-year statute of limitations, it appears to be that was what was intended by the four-year statute of limitations. But I don't believe that policy has any real meaning in modern society. Now, I will say this.
And who should make that policy, this court or the legislature?
Well, obviously, the legislature is the policy-making branch of government that governs statutes like this. But when we look at the facts of this case, we don't have to find that the statute is unconstitutional necessarily. We can simply find that somebody like Mr. Murdoch should be allowed to bring a claim as next friend. And he shouldn't have to establish a beneficial relationship with a minor child to do that, particularly when he's been told that he's not the father. And by allowing the state and the mother to bring claims as next friend, but then locking out a biological father, we never let the biological father into the courthouse. And so I don't think that we have to do anything here in this case other than take a long look at Doak versus Milbauer and say simply that the statute allows for a person with an interest to bring a claim as next friend. And if that's the case, why are we locking out Mr. Murdoch? Why don't we allow him, particularly under circumstances with these unique facts, where he has been told that he's not the father, why don't we allow him to have his day in court? And if a trial court determines that it would be harmful to a minor child under the best interest analysis for that relationship to be established, so be it. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Mr. Astley, good morning. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning to you. May it please the court, my name's Adam Astley. I represent Appley Ann Bennett. Julie Baer is my co-counsel of sorts. She represents Appley Adam Bennett. We've allocated our time with 6 minutes to me. I feel like I'm a little bit like I'm back in law school here. I'll be covering the constitutional issues, and Ms. Baer will be covering the standing slash next friend issue and the equitable tolling issue. And we're going to do our best to try and keep it that way, but I understand that these issues are somewhat interrelated. Mr. Murdoch is before this court not just seeking to be a father, but on page 34 of the transcript, his objectives are abundantly clear. He doesn't just want parenting time with this child, he wants custody with this child. So let's be very clear about that. Mr. Murdoch's objective before the trial court and before this court is to remove a 10-year-old boy, one with whom he has had no meaningful contact of any sort whatsoever, from the only home that boy has ever known. And he is asking this court to do something that is almost as extraordinary as that to help him along the way, and that is to invalidate our statute of limitations under our Paternity Act as being unconstitutional. He bears a very heavy burden to do that, as he should. So I want to discuss the issues that he's raised in the brief, even though it hasn't been discussed at great length by counsel here at oral argument, and give the court the opportunity to discuss these arguments with us. The first claim I want to discuss is Murdoch's claim that there is gender-based discrimination going on here. The gender-based discrimination claim is very easy to dispose of, and the disposition is this. You cannot find that a statute commits gender-based discrimination when the statute itself doesn't discriminate based on gender. And that's what's the
case. This is an equal protection argument.
This is, as I understand the arguments, Your Honor, the equal protection argument has two portions. The first is gender-based discrimination, and the second is disparate treatment of out of wedlock children or fathers. So this is the first portion of the equal protection claim. This court's prior opinion in Sherman T., I think, gave us a pretty good roadmap for how we handle equal protection claims raised within this specific context. And that is that it requires Murdoch to plead and prove that there are similarly situated individuals who are treated different, and that the different treatment is not of a sufficient nature to meet the applicable standard of review or the applicable standard of scrutiny. And so in this instance, he's failed to meet even the first two elements. He's failed to meet the elements to prove that he is similarly situated to somebody who's being treated differently. Our statute under 43-1411 treats men and women the same. It says the mother or father can file a claim in their own name for up to 4 years. And then after that time, the guardian or next friend can file a claim for up to 18 years, or the state of Nebraska can. And Murdoch assumes, without providing any evidence or without even pleading it for that matter, that the next friend extension of time creates a de facto discrimination of sorts, a disparate impact, if you will. Because a lot of times you see either the state filing on behalf of the child as next friend, or you see the mother filing on behalf of the child as next friend. But the fact is that the statute on its face does not discriminate based on gender. You could have a situation where you have an incapacitated mother who is not providing care for the child, and the child is in the care of the biological father, but there's some sort of funding source to provide for child support.
Let me ask you, is this maybe this isn't part of your argument, but is this statute that limits the time, is that subject to, is that an affirmative offense that can be waived by the parties, or is that an absolute requirement that it must be brought within 4 years?
That's a very interesting question, Your Honor. I don't know that it's in play at this case, but it's one that lawyers have struggled with. There have been cases that my firm and other professionals in the area have participated in where we all knew it was past 4 years and nobody raised it as an issue. Those were cases where maybe everybody lived together like a family for 7 years and they just never went to court to establish paternity. And, of course, those cases are messy because you have real estate partition.
So even though the statute provides a 4 years to bring the action, there may be exceptions to that depending upon the facts.
Potentially, and potentially depending on the positioning of the parties. But this case, I think, is probably the worst set of facts that you could get into that, because you literally have somebody who has no contact with this child and no reason, judicial or otherwise, to allow for there to be contact. So the second prong, if you will, of the constitutional argument that they raise is that this is disparate treatment of out-of-wedlock children. And it's very, they actually found a pretty interesting case, I believe it's pronounced Feñata versus A-Team, where this court held that under workers' compensation that you can't hold children born out of wedlock to a higher standard when it comes to receiving benefits from a workplace injury or death. But that case is clear that it's talking about somebody asserting the rights of the child. Now, the Bennetts, who incidentally are here, they're sitting in the back row, have chosen not to assert the rights of the child for support. That's their prerogative as parents. They have a fundamental right under our federal and state constitutions to be parents. And they have chosen not to pursue Mr. Murdoch for support of that child, even though that support might be legally owed if they choose to pursue it. So the Feñata case is inopposite because of the fact that that deals with if they had chosen to invoke the child's rights, then he may be in a different area. There's also this notion of the Sherman T. case, which this court recently decided, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. That case holds that you can't just dispose of these types of things based on a motion to dismiss. And incidentally, that opinion was published while this case was pending before the district court. So Sherman T. requires a disposition on the merits. It indicates that you can't simply dispose of this type of constitutional claim based on a 12b-6. And that's why both parties in this case filed for summary judgment. So Mr. Murdoch had his day in court. He had due consideration by the district court as to his constitutional claims, and the court found against him.
So when both parties file for summary judgment, are they both alleging that there's no factual issue in dispute?
As to the constitutional issue only, I think all three parties in the court agreed that there were disputed facts as to the equitable tolling issue, which is why we had a summary trial of sorts on that.
Okay. Issue. Thank you.
All right. I see my time is up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Burr, good morning to you.
Good morning. Julie Mayor, I'm here this morning on behalf of the intervener and appellee. The estoppel...
How many minutes do we have? Okay. You may proceed.
The estoppel argument is fact-driven, and the facts of this case do not support an equitable tolling of the statute of limitations. The appellant must first prove that Ann Bennett made a false representation or concealed a material fact. And the district court in Sarpy County found that that element was technically met when Ann Bennett responds in the negative to the two questions asked by Brian Murdoch, who's the appellant. One, you're not pregnant by me, are you? And two, you know the baby's not mine. Rather than responding, I do not know, Ann Bennett responds in the negative. And the district court, in its findings, pointed out two important things. One, the statement by Ann Bennett was made well within the statute of limitations. And two, the response comes in relation to two questions that are leading, if not coercive, found by the district court, who heard and observed the witness, an important factor in this. Secondly, the appellant has to establish that Ann Bennett made the statements with the intent of misleading or influencing the appellant in this case. And the district court correctly found that the appellant had not established that element of evidence.
What element was that?
Ann Bennett made the statements with the intention of misleading. Essentially, the court found that Brian Murdoch cannot beg the very response to the question of which he now complained, nor can Mr. Murdoch stick his head in the sand, ignoring the facts and circumstances, and now claim that he was. The facts of the case are simply that Mr. Murdoch wanted to go about life as he knew it, unencumbered by the thought that the child carried by Ann Bennett was perhaps the product of the affair.
These are findings in the context of a summary judgment?
No. These are findings in relation to the trial that we had on the issue of equitable.
So this is after trial.
Yes. Thank you. The appellant must also show that Ann Bennett had knowledge, either actual or constructive, of the facts. And the court again found that technically that element had been met, but the fact of the matter is no one knew the parentage of the minor child until such time as DNA testing was performed, and that occurred after this case was filed. Even if you find that all of those elements are met by the party to whom would be estopped in this case, the facts simply cannot establish a lack of knowledge by Mr. Murdoch or good faith reliance. If you look at the facts at trial in this case, he has unprotected sex with Ann Bennett on over 100 occasions by his own admission. He had knowledge of the pregnancy, knew that he had intercourse with Ann Bennett during the period of conception. He simply cannot seek shelter in the doctrine of equitable estoppel from those facts and based upon that knowledge. The law requires that he exercise diligence and that he demonstrate that before he can have an equitable estoppel. In terms of the next friend argument, just very briefly, Mr. Bennett has no relationship with this child. The law requires a close relationship because the next friend is acting as the alter ego of the minor child. Mr. Bennett has no relationship whatsoever.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
He is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is In Re Interest of Dale L.